Shri Sai Ram. Welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live, coming to you from Prashanti Nilayam, the spiritual capital of the universe. Offering myself at Bhagwan's lotus feet, this is Karuna from Team Radio Sai. I hope you enjoyed sunrise with Sai earlier this morning, which was followed by the live Vedam and Bhajans from the Sai Kulwant Hall. The chanting of the Sai Gayatri that you just heard is continuing right now in the Sai Kulwant Hall while devotees are lined up for the darshan of the Divine Mahasamadhi. And we are now back at the Radio Sai Studios, and the time here right now is 9:37 a.m. Today is Thursday, December the 13th, 2012. And you're tuned to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. The temperatures in Prashanti Nilayam these days continue to range between 20 and 30 degrees, making it rather cool during the night and bright and sunny in the afternoons. Today on Morning Glory, our special guest in the studio is Professor Anantharaman, the media coordinator of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust. As you may recall, after Bhagwan's Mahasamadhi last year on November the 23rd, that is on Baba's 86th birthday, the Central Trust released its very first annual report. And again on November 23rd of this year, which is less than a month ago, on the occasion of the 87th birthday, the Trust released its second annual report for the year 2011 and 2012. The very idea of issuing an annual report is quite a departure from past practices. So what exactly does the annual report of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust contain? What sort of information does it make public? In case you have any such questions on your mind, wait no longer. Today, Professor Anantharaman is here to update Radio Sai listeners on this annual report of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust for the years 2011-2012. Sai Ram, Professor Anantharaman, and welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live.
Thank you.
Sir, congratulations to your team for a very well laid out annual report. The contents and the design are very inviting and it's actually quite engaging to read. It offers so much more than just dry statistics. And for your information, sir, Radio Sai listeners are people across India and around the globe who are deeply committed to Bhagwan and his mission. And since all of them don't have a copy of the Central Trust annual report to read, we are hoping that on Morning Glory, you will offer them an executive summary of the main points of this report. So how did this trend of having an annual report begin?
If you recollect, after the Mahasamadhi in 2010, immediately after that, there was some extensive reporting in the press about several happenings allegedly happened in the Prashanti Nilayam. There was a lot of negative reporting, there were questions, there were innuendos. That was the time it was felt maybe some of these need to be countered. We need to explain to them what exactly was happening. During that period, it was also decided that we should release an annual report every year, which summarizes all the activities of the trust in order to tell people what exactly is happening to put everything in the proper perspective. So in 2011, we released the first annual report. And 2012, we have released the second one, which is an improvement over the first. Hopefully in future years, this will continue to be released, and every year we will look at it differently and improve upon it as we go along. That's the basic genesis of why the annual report was issued from 2011 onwards.
So did you have a model to work on? How did this whole idea start?
Not really. In fact, it was basically started as a report which will just indicate our activities. We subsequently looked at several standard trust reports, issued almost about 40 to 50 different trust reports. I had a look from Melinda Gates Foundation, from Dadabhai Nawroji Foundation, all several reports that we looked at, company balance sheets, etc., etc. And from all this, we formed a broad idea of the method of presentation, what the other people are talking. But with respect to our own report, our objective was fourfold. Firstly, we wanted to cover in a print format the extensive welfare activities of the entire Sai organization. Not necessarily about the trust. We want to talk about the entire Sai movement. And we want to divide all of them into several different sectors. Rather than talk about what organization A or organization B did, we wanted to divide them all into activities like educare, medicare, social care. What all happened in under educare? What all happened under medicare? what all happened under social care. And we also felt that we need to give them statistical information. How many students are studying in the college? How many surgeries are being done? So it's both a combination of activities, record, statistics, and also objectives, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
And we also, through all this, wanted to convey a message that all activities of Bhagwan continued exactly as before. There is total stability and we are well on the way to fulfilling Bhagwan's mission fully.
Mm-hmm.
These were the four objectives. So we used, I must say, the annual report as a vehicle to convey all these over a meaningful manner.
Mm-hmm. So this attempt at transparency and information dissemination, accurate information dissemination, who was it intended at?
Predominantly, this was intended for opinion makers, press, people in the government, bank, and our donors, our contributors, predominantly intended for them. But in the very first annual report, we felt we also have to communicate to our own devotees, and a lot of them were feeling confused as to what was happening. So even though the predominant audience was the opinion makers and the donors and the bankers and the government people, etc., our large body of devotees also were part of this, even though they were not the main attendees as far as this message was concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So it was overall, it communicated necessary message to all the people concerned.
I see. And the Trust has been holding a media conference each year after it releases the report for the last 2 years on Bhagwan's birthday. So how has the response from the media been to the annual report?
Oh, the response to the media for the annual report this year has been outstanding. Last year, it was kind of lukewarm because we did it for the first year.
And I think some statistics that they were looking for were not in last year's annual report.
Exactly. In last year, for example, we didn't give the full financials.
Mm.
It was just an attempt. You know, we put something together and released it.
It was a good, great start, though.
Right. And this year, the press report was outstanding. In fact, the very next day after the press conference, the purpose of the press conference was basically to give them copies of the annual report and also take any questions about any matter connected with that trust that they wanted to raise. And in fact, the reaction was extremely enthusiastic because there were banner headlines. One of the vernacular newspapers said, Sathya Sai Trust clearly establishes transparency.
Mm.
This was the banner headline in one of the papers.
It's a real pat on the back of the
Absolutely,
Trust.
Absolutely. And another paper said, no other charitable organization in India has presented such complete, exhaustive reports.
Oh, fantastic. Quite
and
a feather in your cap, sir.
Not in my cap. I think it basically talks about record of all of our activities here. And because we also said we have released the full financial information here, how much was received, how much was sent, and, you know, the same papers that were reporting earlier that there were secret tunnels here and all that, were all the same papers who came back and said it was something which was absolutely frank. We have not seen this kind of a report from any other charitable organization, and it was very, 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 very laudatory.
Hmm. That is very pleasing to hear. So, is it going to be an annual affair now? Although you're not mandated by the law to do so.
We are not mandated by law to do that. But, you know, in this process we find, as we prepare this, we ourselves are struck by what is happening here. Each year, as I prepare and as my colleagues prepare this annual report, we ourselves are wonderstruck at both the extent and the depth of this whole organization.
Very true.
And, you know, we have all kinds of people here. We have cardiologists working as photographers, chief engineers doing electrical work, research scientists working as carpenters, all kinds of people, groups of people that are working here, etc. And the whole movement, as we record it, as we write it, we ourselves are completely taken aback at the vastness of this movement.
Mm-hmm.
So, in addition to conveying a message to outsiders, this also seems to be an opportunity for all of us to record and turn inwards, look at what is happening, mm-hmm. and make corrections. For example, arising out of this now, I understand every state organization has been asked to produce a report by the All India President, submit it to them. International organization is going to produce their own kind of a report. So it's also consolidating our own thinking, recording. The moment you have to put something in writing, There's a great efficiency in that happening.
Mm-hmm.
And we see driving an efficiency right through the organization. And I think that probably is one of the biggest advantages of this annual report.
So that's very forward thinking on behalf of the Central Trust and the SAI organization to think in these terms. Now, what are the main topics? I understand from browsing through the annual report, you have covered the activities of the Central Trust, the Sri Satya Sai Seva Organization of India, the various trusts that function in the ashram, such as the Media Foundation, as well as the Sai, International Sai Organization. So what are some of these sections that the annual report is covering?
Well, the best way for me to do that would be to go over the report. I see that you have a copy of the annual report before you. If I can borrow that from you and go through that. We start basically with some introduction. For instance, we start right at the first page with a letter Swami wrote in May 1947 when he was 20 years old, where he basically for the first time declared that no one can comprehend my glory. Whoever he is, whatever his method of inquiry, and however long his attempt. We have reproduced that letter.
And it rings so true.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, if you look at that line, if you read that line and go through the complete report, you can, it's almost as if these lines, what Swami talks in these lines, are reflected in the rest of the pages.
Which,
as if it's a confirmation of that.
And it's a 120-page report, and after going through it, you realize nobody can comprehend the enormity nor the profundity of this mission.
Nor the vastness, nor the diversity.
Yes.
There are also additional things.
Totally.
And then we start with the report of the trustees, which is a very conventional report. And then we go and talk about our how the whole, our trust is organized. Ours is a very complex organization. We have half a dozen different trusts. Not all of them have an official, legal, administrative reporting relationship to each other. But all of them have a common objective of Swami's mission. So we tried putting together a graph, an organizational chart indicating how all these organizations go together, etc. So that was an attempt. So we have an organization here. In the page after that, we have a financial statement. For the first time, we are giving a financial statement of income, expenditure, and where the sources of funds came from.
Fantastic.
Where were the funds applied, and these funds, where were they spent, how much in education, how much in medical relief, how much in welfare activities, how much in medical, and in order to make it easily understandable to people, we have often given a pie diagram, block diagram.
And so colorful and so easy to understand and grasp.
Exactly.
Before you go any further, this is one topic that was really hot, making headline news in the media blitz that was being the canard that we experienced after Bhagwan's Mahasamadhi. And there were all kinds of unimaginable amounts of monies that were being mentioned about the assets of the trust. So based on the annual reports, would you like to tell Radio Sai listeners what sort of an income we had last year in crores?
Last year, if you see the income and expenditure statement, we had two sources of income. One was from donations from people. Another was interest from capital funds, which we already have. And a small amount of grants. Putting them all together, there was a total receipt of about 200 crores, out of which 82 crores came out of donation. 110 crores came from interest in capital fund that is already kept with us.
So Swami was so futuristic. He invested enough money to ensure the longevity and continuity.
Absolutely.
Just the interest is 110 crores.
Interest loan is 110 crores. It's absolutely adequate to keep all our activities at the current level without any problem whatsoever for at least another 5 years.
Wow, that is so heartwarming to know.
Yes. And only thing is for future projects and to provide for inflation, etc., we need to continue to get donations. After all, you know, we need to undertake greater activities, more activities, etc. So donations need to continue to come in, and all these donations invariably would be put either as a capital fund or as projects.
And even last year we had over
82 crores was the amount that was received
as donations.
Absolutely.
So
the story that donations have dropped, funds have dropped, there is financial crisis is in a completely incorrect information.
It's not based on truth at all.
Absolutely not. people continue to be very conscious of the fact that donations need to be made for all these welfare activities. There has been no reduction in these of any whatsoever. In fact, all activities, all expenditure of the trust, all future projects, etc., are going without any let whatsoever.
You know, it's very interesting. People who contribute their resources, time and energy and love to Bhagwan's mission are never influenced by what the media says. That has been a very common thread throughout the Sai Avatar's career. But those who have nothing to contribute except maybe some sound bites, they are the ones who read this stuff and get so influenced. I remember one particular media report very distinctly on a major national channel where a person was reporting about some secret tunnel under the Yajur Mandir, and he said he was reporting from Puttaparthi, and he was standing and doing his piece to camera in front of the Sri Satya Sai Super Speciality Hospital, Whitefield. I very well recognize the building. And on that was imposed the word Puttaparthi. So they posed the Whitefield Hospital as Puttaparthi Yajur Mandir, and this is the palatial house in which Sai Baba used to live. So considering that was the level of accuracy of a major TV channel in India, which is, I guess, one of the number one news channels, we can very well see how important the facts in this annual report are.
Absolutely.
Set the record right.
Absolutely.
So how did we do in terms of sources of funds here? You have spoken of capital funds and current liabilities. Would you like to explain what that's all about?
Sources of funds are, these are the funds that we have received over the years, which are kept as a general fund. Interest out of that is an income, and we spend that interest towards these welfare activities.
And we have a lot of fixed assets, investments, current assets. Those are application of funds. These are huge amounts of money.
Not really. If you look at the fixed assets, these are all, you find in the application of funds, out of the 1,508 crores of sources of funds, 1,229 crores are invested in deposits, etc., from out of which you get an interest of 110 crores.
I see. Out of curiosity, what sort of investment strategy does the trust use?
No, we don't really go for investment into stocks, investment everywhere. Swami was very, very careful while he was here.
Mm-hmm.
All of our investment is invariably in bank fixed deposits.
And nationalized banks?
Nationalized bank fixed deposits. And Swami was very particular that we should take no risk with these capital funds. We must ensure that we get the maximum amount of return in gilt-edged securities. As far as these are concerned, we are still following exactly the same kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful to know that. I'm sure listeners will really appreciate that very much. Now, we've spoken about compliance.
And one significant thing to note, as we have also mentioned in the report, is out of a total expenditure of 82.49 crores,
yes, sir,
76.71 crores, that is almost 93%, have been spent in service and welfare activities.
Wow.
Only 7% has gone towards miscellaneous administration, etc., etc. It's a very clear indication, bulk of the money, it's okay to spend the money, but it's very gratifying to know that over 93% of this money has been spent on real welfare activities.
Very true.
Right? So, there has been no secret tunnel siphoning anywhere happening here.
I'm sure Radio Sai listeners were never concerned about the secret tunnels, but for the media, it's good for them to know that.
And then subsequent pages, we give a complete report about compliance and social impact.
Mm-hmm.
There were some comments last year about where is this money coming from, how much foreign donations, etc. We make a complete statement about where Ministry of Home Affairs, we need to give a return on Foreign Contribution Regulation Act. We need to give returns for under the Income Tax Act. All these returns have been submitted in time, and we are giving a statement of what returns were submitted to them at what time. So
you
complete
know,
statement.
Considering the caliber of the trustees of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust, this is not surprising at all, because everything we have done has met the highest possible standards of accountability and transparency. So as far as compliance and social impact go, I think this is one trust in India that can, obviously with the annual report becoming an annual feature, this will be a model trust that people will look up to for transparency and accountability.
Absolutely. Even then, we re-examined our internal audit systems, we re-examined statutory reports, went through the whole thing with a fine-tooth comb. and ensure that internally we have created enough safeguard protection to ensure that there is a complete rigorous control system being followed very rigidly. Because the trustees are constantly conscious of the fact they're all just trustees of a wealth that is handed over to them. And they need to maintain it and spend it and spend whatever proceeds they have out of it to the public good. I think they're extremely conscious of that.
And all of them work in honorary capacities.
Absolutely.
And they are men. I wish there were also some women though.
They travel at their own expenditure and give their time freely and willingly.
And professionally, they're all highly qualified for this sort of work. Some of them are in business, entrepreneurs, chartered accountants, advocates.
Right. From ex-Chief Justice of India to noted lawyers. And these are all public men, professional men, men of honor.
And the Central Vigilance Commissioner?
Yes, we have a Central Vigilance Commissioner who is also one of the trustees.
Trustees and administrators with extensive experience.
Absolutely.
Would you actually like to maybe tell our listeners who exactly the trustees are? Because when I was watching the news media, it was very interesting. They were naming people who are not even on the trust.
Justice Bhagavathy is former Chief Justice of India. And then Sri Indulal Shah. Sri Indulal Shah, as you are aware, has been a doyen of the Sai movement in India.
Oh, definitely.
Responsible for creating the All India Organization, the international organization, a long time associate of Swami.
And a chartered accountant
and
by profession.
Leading chartered accountant by profession. Sri Giri, the former, who was also the Vice Chancellor. Before that, he was a Vigilance Commissioner of the Government of India. He was a Secretary to the Government of India Department of Education. Sri V. Srinivasan, who was formerly the National President of the Confederation of Indian Industry, currently the President of All India Seva Organization. Sri Chakravarti, who was the Collector, District Magistrate, and former Finance Secretary Projects of Government of Andhra Pradesh. He was also former Commissioner of Commercial Taxes, Government of Andhra Pradesh. Sri Bhagavath, who was the former Chairman of the Indian Overseas Bank. Sri Shetty, who was the former Chairman in India of Canara Bank. Sri Naganand, the Supreme Court Advocate and a Chartered Accountant. He is also the President of the Karnataka Section of the International Commission of Jurists. And Sri Ratnakar, who is an MBA from the Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning and who is also an eminent and active social worker and a leading citizen of Prashant Nilayam.
And that's a very impressive list, indeed. So I'm sure our listeners needed to hear that because some of the media reports were hilariously funny. They were, I think, considering that Mr. V. Srinivasan is an entrepreneur himself and he's the All India President of the Sri Sathya Sai Seva Organization, they kept mixing his name with a number of other persons with the same last name.
Yes.
So they didn't even do their homework to find out which Mr. Srinivasan was on the Central Trust.
Correct. And then after the social impact, we introduced a new column called Festivities at Prashant Nilayam, where we felt we need to let the world know how festivals of different faiths.
Yeah, it's very, very diverse, very multi-faith, multicultural.
The Buddhists, the Islam, the Jews, and people from all over the world, how they come and perform. We've just given a snapshot of about a few of these functions that took place in Prashant Nilayam.
Yeah.
And one of the significant features was, ever since the Mahasamadhi, not one function has been let go. We are having every single function conducted exactly the same way as before. So we thought we will give a pictorial representation and a description of all these functions.
And you know what people find very touching is the decorum and the dignity with which every a celebration begins with the members of the group walking up to the Mahasamadhi to offer the card as we did when Bhagwan was in the form. So there seems, and that moment is so poignant that people feel the presence is still there. Nothing has really changed. Prashant Nilayam is even more vibrant than it used to be while Swami was in the form.
Absolutely. I think it was the university which must take the credit for establishing this. If you recollect 2 years ago when the convocation took place, they even had recorded voice of the previous chancellor declare the convocation open.
So when Bhagwan's voice came on the PA system, everybody felt his presence right away.
Absolutely. And people went, received their medals, kept it on the chair. It was almost as if Bhagwan was sitting there, except that his form was not there. So everything went on as usual. And that tradition which the university basically started is something which is being followed by everybody right through.
Very rightly said. And it's a very good positive tradition. It's very heartwarming.
Correct.
And then as you go on with the annual report...
And after that, after this, we have a section. Rather than talk about... You see, there are several organizations who have been responsible for the Sai movement. So we didn't want this to become just a report of the central trust with just numbers of money received, money paid, etc.
Yeah.
We wanted to use that opportunity also to talk about all the activities of the central trust. So we divided them into three areas, Medicare, Educare, and Social Care. In Medicare, we wanted to talk about the hospitals. Educare, we wanted to talk about all the educational institutions. And Social Care, we wanted to talk about all the organizations. Mm-hmm. And so we wrote a brief preamble about this, and where I think I can read what we have written here, but that's very descriptive what we were trying to achieve entirely through the report.
Mm-hmm.
We say here that while the initiatives of the Satya Sai Seva organizations are categorized under Educare, Medicare and Social Care, they are in fact integrated. The movement has witnessed an emergence of an institutional framework that connects, consolidates, and integrates many of these activities.
Mm-hmm.
This connection is a powerful force, for it brings high efficiency, drive for excellence, and professional expertise. Being technology-driven, it's transmitted fast across different geographies, resulting in quantum leap in scale, outreach, and quality of service. More than anything, they're all cemented together by Baba's concept of universal and selfless love. This is exactly what we want to project in this.
Mm-hmm.
That the whole thing is cemented together by Swami's concept of Laval
Saval. Very beautiful. And the annual report has beautiful pictures, very nice color printing, because sometimes a picture speaks a thousand
Absolutely.
Words.
Absolutely. And we had this amazing picture of this Whitefield Hospital, a friend of mine whom I knew in Bangalore, one day frantically telephoned me and said, "Today there is a thunder and lightning. I'm going to go in the picture of Whitefield Hospital." I said, "Go ahead." And he immediately sent this picture to me. It's a beauty, absolute beauty.
And the skies, it's like heavens are opening up and light is just pouring into this beautiful temple of healing.
Exactly. You can visualize and imagine whatever you want out of this.
It's very heavenly. It has a very heavenly feel to it.
Right.
Now, there are beautiful statistics here.
Right.
Let's talk about the kind of work we do under our medical trust. What sort of, not only are our hospitals continuing the good work that Bhagwan has initiated, but they seem to be upgrading and improving with each passing day.
We have two hospitals and two general two super specialty hospitals and two general hospitals.
Mm-hmm. And a mobile hospital.
And in the super specialty hospitals, both the hospitals, we are adding new equipment. For instance, in the Whitefield Hospital, we are adding electrophysiology with 3D mapping, which is a new technology which has been added, and 3D echocardiography. There's also a fractional flow reserve, which is a technique used for coronary catheterization. These are all the additional equipment that has been added. We are also adding a lot of additional equipment in our Prashantigram Hospital also. Recently, there was another one that was added recently. And we wanted to give a record of all these that was happening. And another interesting thing that has happened is the reach of our mobile hospital.
It's tremendous, isn't it?
Yeah. Our mobile hospital alone has dealt with a total of nearly 100,000, 83,000 patients to be exact in the last 1 year.
Wow.
And a new introduction last year, in the last couple of years, has been the telehealth services, which is a collaborative effort between Satya Sai Central Trust and Indian Space Research Organization.
ISRO.
The power of information technology to extend the reach of our medical care and medical education and training. So, whole idea is, we have an outstanding facility here, which is a model for everybody else to follow. There are two things we can do. Number one, let everybody follow this model, and other people are in fact following this model. Two, one more hospital has come up in Raipur, on the same model as our super specialty hospital here, created by another trust, started by another devotee of Sai Baba. I'm sure there'll be many more such efforts that is coming in. People are building schools somewhere to re-establish, to imitate whatever we are doing through our own school system. So similarly, even our existing services, we want it to be made available to all, which is Satya Sai Telehealth Services.
Mm-hmm. So that patients need not travel
need
a long
not
distance,
travel
they
along.
Can consult.
Exactly. From patients as far as Orissa can be through the telehealth services can be given advice, cardiac advice and service from somebody sitting in Whitefield and in Prashantigram.
So it's a beautiful blueprint for resolving the healthcare issues of whole of India.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Or for that matter, the developing world.
And imagine all this health delivery is given free of cost.
That's totally mind-boggling.
Right.
There must be crores and crores of rupees that the Central Trust spends to ensure this.
Absolutely. That's the figure we are given in the first page.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we go and talk about EduCare. Previously, whenever we talked about EduCare, we only talked about our university here, which has an integral education as its motive.
Across its four campuses?
The fourth campus is operational last year.
At Mudanhalli?
But there is more in the sense we have a secondary school, which provides a lot of inputs of people into these universities. The Satya Sai Vidyavahini project, which makes these school boards across the country, our value education availability. They have already gone and presented this to several school boards, 14 school boards of Standard 6, almost 45 school boards
mm-hmm.
have been given the first set of lessons.
By the Vidyavahini team.
So we have given you a report about this Vidyavahini team. And then not this, there are Sai schools in India.
I believe 99 of them.
Yeah, which we operate through several different trusts.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, we have integrated all of them into a single educational standard from one place. And these 99 schools are now being managed by our international Sai organization through an establishment.
International Sai organization?
All India Sai organization. And there are about, it exists in every state from Andhra Pradesh to Paschim Bengal.
To Uttarakhand, Sikkim, Rajasthan, Odisha, so many places, Himachal Pradesh, Haryana, Gujarat, Karnataka,
exactly.
Kerala.
So when we talk about Sai education, it's not just the university alone.
Mm-hmm.
Not the primary school alone, but it exists all over. And more schools are springing up. This is the officially recorded ones. There are also other schools which are following the pattern and doing this.
Time has come when people are recognizing the value of character-based education.
Absolutely.
The model that Swami gave decades ago, but he never made a big deal about it.
Absolutely.
Suddenly he was seeding and seeding. Now there is a harvest that's happening.
He quietly introduced and then went on to the next thing. And it's just, you know, blowing up that it's going into a tree. Is becoming a forest today.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And it's yielding beautiful flowers.
And then last year we introduced a whole column about this annual cultural and sports meet. We spent 10 pages talking about it. Mainly because our annual sports and cultural meet is a fiesta where all the bright young minds from all our campuses join together. In the past, they did all this in order to give joy to Swami. Now, last year, in the absence of the physical form of Swami, we found their desire to give joy was probably even greater.
Mm-hmm.
They had newer events, which completely talked about their dedication and teamwork and whatever they are capable of. This is a big building block as far as our youth in Sai movement
is
concerned.
Creativity, leadership,
absolutely,
everything.
Absolutely. You find all kinds of creative ideas here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just an annual sports and cultural meet. It's almost like a fiesta of creativity and innovation.
Indeed it is.
Yeah, that's why we gave a completely 10 page.
And there's a section on the Gram Seva project, which is very popular amongst the students.
Swami introduced this Gram Seva project several years ago in order to do three objectives. Number
mm-hmm.
one, he wanted to expose students and sensitize them to rural living. Secondly, he wanted to send a message to the people in rural area that there is a God who cares for them. Thirdly, he wanted to teach the students the basic principles of project management.
Mm.
He achieved all these three, the strategist that he achieved all these three objectives with a single project, which is Gram Seva.
Beautiful.
And Gram Seva continued last year and the last 2 years at exactly the same kind of an intensity and level as the Gram Sevas earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And we have given statistics of how many people were served, how many villages were served in this report. 153 villages spread across the three mandals of Puttaparthi. Again, when Swami did this, his intention was not to solve the problems of rural India. His intention basically is to establish a pattern and a model which students all over the country and all over the world can follow.
Mm-hmm.
While taking advantage of this to develop, provide integral education, value education to our own students, this also is a model for every university and every educational institution to follow.
And this case, apart from being a case study, is such a learning ground for those who graduate from this university, because our alumni are continuing this tradition wherever they are going.
Absolutely, absolutely. Not only our alumni, our All India Seva Organization, people in our, in Seva organizations, there are also hundreds of these unreported Grama Seva projects happening all along. Some of them are being reported.
Yeah.
Very soon I get a feeling we will probably not be able to report anything because they'll be so vast.
So vast, yes. And all these years also we didn't talk about it. All of a sudden, exactly. Now that we are collating this information, exactly. We are feeling exactly. So overwhelmed.
Exactly, absolutely, absolutely. In fact, you know, when I... it was absolutely fascinating experience, you know, when in the process of when we were trying to present this kind of a report, the whole vistas that got revealed to us.
Mm-hmm.
None of us were aware of it. Or maybe we were aware of it, but we were not conscious of it all the time. But when we put them all together and see it in one place,
it's
the
like,
first
wow.
Thought that comes in our mind is, wow.
Yes, indeed.
What is it?
So vast.
Absolutely.
It's
absolutely.
All a one-person miracle.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
If Swami said, if we believe that we are also God, each of us can bring about a similar
right.
miracle. Imagine.
One person who was 5'4" tall and weighed 115 pounds.
And who had no formal education
absolutely.
And no seed capital
dropped
to begin.
Dropped out of school. Yeah, exactly. Right? It's amazing. It's so true. It's completely unbelievable.
Yeah, because they say, you know, the simplicity of truth renders it incredulous at times.
And then we go and talk about social care.
Yes.
Where we have tried to give an organizational structure here.
This is the Sri Satya Sai Seva Organization.
Seva Organization.
Which is the foundation of this miracle called Seva Dal.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Our Seva Dal is probably a remarkable group of people who do their job with a quiet efficiency, continue to do it exactly the same way. There are a lot of concerns and doubts. Would Seva Dal continue to come now that Swami's physical proximity is not there? Previously, I remember several years ago, one of the rewards of Seva Dal was they could do Padanamaskar to Swami.
Yes.
And Swami slowly withdrew that Padanamaskar. At least the Seva Dals were having darshan of Swami. Now they can't even have a darshan. So the question arose, why should a 60-year-old Seva Dal man sit all night guarding a frontier somewhere where he's getting absolutely no reward, not even a darshan. But they continue to do the job with the same amount of love and same amount of dedication. It's amazing.
It is.
It's unbelievable.
This
so amazing.
Army of virtuous men
absolutely.
And women and
absolutely.
Sometimes children who come to assist young adults.
Absolutely.
Just to watch them is such a moving experience,
absolutely.
The dedication with which they absolutely. Serve this ashram. All their hospitals, they all run on this fuel of love that Swami has created.
Just imagine, there are about 1,200 of these men, Seva Dal.
And women.
And men and women of Seva Dal, who are in service throughout the day. And 1,200 different men. It may not be the same. It will be 1,200 men for the next 3 weeks. And then some other 1,200 men will come the 3 weeks afterwards, all over. You know, like a franchise of a McDonald's. They have service concept given to them in a tablet form, which they do not mechanically, but with love.
Mm. And that's taking their personal time off, professional time
absolutely.
Off, dedicating it, under, incurring a lot of expense to
they
reach
they travel
there.
At their own expenditure. We provide them probably a couple of meals here, provide them accommodation, but they take time off from their work. And these are all people of different types, bright young men, students, professionals, engineers, VPs, doctors.
And I think this, the fact that many of our Seva Dals are so highly qualified, they come from diverse backgrounds, that's what makes this workforce so creative
exactly.
and efficient.
Exactly.
Because they bring those efficiency into the work. They don't render Seva just for the sake of
correct.
It. They do it as efficiently, as lovingly, as
correct.
Smartly as they possibly
correct,
can.
Correct. And then we went to talk about the international organization also after the national organization. In fact, in the national organization, at the end of it, we also give a set of statistics where we talk about our activities in 23 states of the country. 2,700 villages adopted.
In India?
In India.
Mm-hmm.
And there are 140,000 trained Sevadal people.
Wow.
Sevadal people have committed loyalty. They're not just raw people, trained Sevadal people.
There's 1.5 lakh people.
Exactly. And there are about 592,000 active members of the organization.
Phew.
Who attend samitis, who attend meetings, who in activities. And there are over 10 million Balvikas graduates.
Wow. That is an enormous number.
Absolutely. And these Balvikas graduates are committed soldiers in the Sai mission.
Definitely.
Right.
They are our future leaders. So
absolutely.
They are emerging as
absolutely.
Young leaders.
Absolutely. So, somebody talked about multiplier effect, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Swami has created this whole, somewhere along the line, if you sit and think, how did he conceive of this whole thing? How did these different pieces, one day he quietly went and started a university, another day he went and quietly started a hospital somewhere, and the third day he picks up a Sevadal somewhere. Somewhere along the line, in his mind, he has connected all this.
Mm.
He knew that all this was a model which was going to work. It's something remarkable. If somebody consciously sat to draw... I teach management in the business school. If I consciously want to sit and analyze and prepare a model of all this, mm-hmm. I won't be able to do that.
Mm.
So it's only some divine power.
Cosmic mind, cosmic intelligence.
It's only that which is capable of doing all this.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's absolutely impossible. And then we go to talk about Satya.
And Swami had no consultants, strategists advising him. He just quietly did it one step at a time.
And he didn't even put it on a piece of paper.
Nothing.
There's no record anywhere.
It was just like a natural thing to do for him, like breathing.
Exactly. One fine morning, I remember, he sat here and announced, 1 year from now, there'll be a campus in Mudanahalli. It happened.
Yes.
And I remember several years ago, he announced, 1 year from now, there'll be a university. All these colleges will join university. So it's almost as if he had in his mind all these pieces, just made a dramatic announcement of one piece, chose a man, you take care of that piece. And then he chose another man, take care of that piece. And he joined all the dots.
Yeah. And you know this new age stuff about the power of intention. Whatever Swami spoke just
correct.
Happened.
Correct.
I guess that just came from the purity of his intention.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely.
Selflessness.
And then
selflessness.
We go to talk about the International Sai
Organization.
Yeah. Where we operate in about 113 countries, right?
And we continue to do the same work, the medical
absolutely,
camps.
Absolutely, all of them.
The soup kitchens.
Yeah, there are 113 countries. There are about 2,038 Sai centers. There are 24 disaster relief everywhere. And you have this lovely map. You know, when I looked at this map, it's almost like a general placing his army in several different battlefields.
But this is the general of love, his
absolutely.
Army of loving
absolutely.
Soldiers. Peacekeepers.
I can't conceive of any organization having such extensive location from...
China, if
from
I may
Ireland.
Add now.
Yeah, I believe so. China now. And not only that, it's amazing all over the place. The other day a group of people from Russia, from 21 Russian countries came and said, we want to translate Divine Grace into Russian. Can you get his permission? So I wrote to India Today. Within 2 hours, permission came. Go ahead. Amazing. It would never happen in a magazine like India Today. It happened.
Oh, the special feature on Bhagavan, Divine Grace.
It's going to be translated into Russian.
Oh, the India Today special supplement.
Absolutely.
That's fantastic news.
Absolutely. And then we also talk about the Satya Sai Nitya Anadana Patakam. Again, this is something where it was launched in 2010, covering villages around. And this is the area where there's amazing stories of whenever these people go to a village, there's a demonstration of Swami's love. Vibhuti,
wow.
Kumkum, any village that they go to. It's almost as if Swami is waiting to accompany them. There's a report of that. And then there's a report about Eswarama Welfare Trust, their mother and child program, etc. And of course, we conclude with
the most important.
Most important.
Absolutely.
The amount of work with Sai Radio, amazing work that you're doing, that you people are doing, communicating this to all over the world. This communication is a very, very important kind of a thing. Where I must say you're doing a great service.
Thank you, sir, on behalf of the entire team.
And we conclude with organizations, human resources. This is something which is amazing. When you see here, you find we operate in about 113 countries. In India alone, there are about nearly 600,000 members all over the country, active members who attend samitis, who do work, etc., etc. Out of these people, on every day, there is about 4,659 members are engaged in full-time service.
Wow.
In Medicare, Educare, Social Care, and this also includes the 1594 Sevadal people who work in day in and day out. And we have given a graph about how much of this hospital staffing, how many doctors, how many nurses, how many paramedics, Educare staffing, how many academics, administrative contingent staff, social care, how many people work, etc., etc. And when you look at all this, what is amazing here is the human capital of Sathya Sai organization.
Absolutely.
It continues to demonstrate its vibrancy. You have doctors, you have teachers, managers, technologists, volunteers, casual workers, professionals, and each person brings their diverse experience to serve, create and sustain the organization. And this happened not by a formal organization where there's a boss on top,
no,
where there are people, job specification for which you pay a salary, no. All these people have come voluntarily together, created this organization by themselves.
Like an organic growth.
Nobody sat to this organization.
But then we had a nucleus called the love cell.
Exactly. So if I teach management at the university.
And it defies your theories.
If I think of how do I create an organization like this, my mind goes back to chief executive will sit and draw the mission, the vision, the organization, the structure. But nothing like this has happened here.
It turns all those theories on its head.
Absolutely, absolutely. It just all came together and
it's
achieving this.
The network of pure love,
absolutely.
Selfless love,
absolutely.
Of the incarnation.
Exactly. And that's why we conclude here, both in geographic reach and competence, no other charitable organization has such a committed and diverse human and intellectual capital. This is where our organization is completely different from all other charitable trusts. Every other charitable trust has plenty of resources, money.
Yeah.
But people resources, I've done a deep bit to before writing this sentence, I did in-depth investigation of every major charitable trust in the world.
And
I found not one of them have the kind of reach and competence of people that we have in our organization, which is very rare, which has been created.
And I think you're absolutely right. And the fact that out of this human capital, most people are volunteers.
Exactly. Most people are volunteers. Most people have come in without any clear idea what they are expected to do. When they came in, nobody told them, this is your job. Nobody told them, this is your boss. Nobody told them, this is your remuneration.
They just rose to the occasion.
They just clicked together and things worked.
They did what needed to be done.
Exactly, exactly.
Because I think they're coming from a different motivation level.
And the remarkable thing is, you can understand all this happening when there is a physical, charismatic leadership on top. You can understand. People would relate. I myself related to Swami when he was physically there.
Yes, sir.
But the fact that it continues to work, the same magic continues to work, even in the absence of the physical, charismatic figure. Right? Speaks volumes of this. You know, this is completely removes the question after Sai who. There's no after Sai, first of all, in the first place. He's there all the time.
Right.
He has established it. He has sown this. It'll just grow. It's something remarkable.
And we say amen to that. Now, Professor Nathraman, you've given us an amazing bird's eye view of the annual report. I just want our listeners to also know something, that they can themselves review this online, because, you know, Professor Anantharaman has only published 1,500 copies of the annual report and they've gone fast like hotcakes. But our listeners can download and or view it online. There's a PDF available on the website of the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust, and the website is srisathyasai.org.in, in for India. So it's SRISATHYASAI, Sri Sathya Sai is one word, www.org.in. You can go there. It's right on the home page on the left corner. You can download it, and it's very well laid out and very easy to navigate. And I just want to thank you so very much. But last question, what do you expect to be the takeaway for a person who's browsing through this report?
I can answer it only the same way as I felt as each year I sit and spend my time in preparing this. As I prepare it each year, I'm wonderstruck at both the extent and depth and the vibrancy of this organization. As I said before, cardiologists doubling as photographers, nuclear physicists running radio stations, IT specialists running a truck. It's a huge, huge collection of complete, the elite, the common man, the prince and the plebeian, all of them putting together, all offering service with love, with a single objective, that Bhagwan's mission will go on. It is that persistent, constant impression that I have every year as I prepare this report, and as I prepare it each year, new vistas arise. It's almost like an ocean. We are just touching probably pieces of this ocean, something much bigger, much vaster, something which is unimaginable for all of us. It is that feeling of humbleness, feeling of humility, that we are probably sitting at the cusp of something vast, something big. I hope little bit of it touches all the people who have basically seen this report. I want them to imagine this. Just a piece, just an edge of what we are.
Thank you. Thank you once again for joining us in Morning Glory. And we hope you will be back soon again to tell us more about the good work that the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust and the Sri Sathya Sai Seva Organization is doing.
Thank you.
Sai Ram, sir. And now, dear listeners, I'm sure you enjoyed that conversation. If you have any feedback about the conversation with Professor Anantharaman regarding the annual report of the Sai organization, you can drop in your emails, and our email ID remains listener@radiosai.org. listener@radiosai.org. We always look forward to hearing from you. And now I'm very pleased to bring you the feature presentation of Morning Glory, that is the concluding part of a three-part conversation with an alumnus of the Sai University, Brother Sonam Gampso. And he is in conversation with Radio Sai's Bishu Prushti. Over now to Brother Sonam Gampso in conversation with Bishu.
And one of the serio-comical, again, things, you know, so many boys would be inspired to sing bhajan. So these aspirants would go to Swami and say, Swami, I want to sing bhajan. And Swami would say, go and sing. Swami never said no to anyone. It was all the time, yes, yes, yes. And I believe that even people with wrong intentions, if they would go to Swami and say, Swami, please bless me for my intention, Swami would say, go, my blessings are with you, my son.
Yes.
So, you know, these people would go, and these people, armed with that permission from Bhagwan to sing bhajan, they would barge into the bhajan hall and say, come on brother, put that scale, I want to sing. So in the beginning, when that started happening on a mass scale, and bhajans became very bad, because these people wouldn't have practiced, but because Swami gave them permission, they would come and sing. And once Swami said, came down heavily on me. Swami said, you being a senior, you're not controlling things here.
Oh,
people are singing all out of scale. Shame on you. Siggu Leda, bad Pampistanu. These were the words that Swami
would use. Oh my God. This is when you are doing PhD.
Doing my PhD. Swami said, throw you out. I'll throw you out. You have no shame. Bhajans are going on so bad. What would the whole world think of our bhajans in Prashanti Nilayam? Is this the way you should sing? You know, I couldn't utter the words, but they were there in my heart that Swami, you gave them permission what to do. And all of a sudden, this wisdom dawned on me that the permission was all the time conditional permission. Because the moment I thought like that, Swami looked at me and said, everyone wants moksha, and I've said, never denied it. Sabko moksha chahiye. Swami, yes, bolta hai. Lekin moksha ke liye sadhna karo. He said that. Imagine he was equating that experience to this.
God.
And he was telling that, when did I deny liberation to anyone? Right from the beginning of time, everybody is everyone's prerogative to be liberated. But then you work out your salvation.
You say yes, but you do your sadhana.
Yeah. Yes, you do your sadhana.
You want to sing, but do your sadhana.
Do your sadhana. That was what he was meaning. And it fell on me like a beautiful experience, and I said, yes, this is what I need to tell these youngsters now. So when they come to me and say that, look, I have been permitted by Swami to sing, I'll tell them, you practice in the hostel, and you deserve to sing, and then you can sing with us. So I started that, and you can well imagine, I got, you know, headlong, I was with an entire renegade group who were telling me that, who are you to take away my chance? Swami gave me permission. Who are you to tell me no? I said, Swami told you to practice and sing. No, he didn't say that. He said, you can sing. I said, when he says he can sing, it also means, this comes with a tag, that you have to practice. Otherwise, how can you sing? Then I had to tell them, see, unless you practice and sing, even you will put yourself to shame. And then, you know, the whole bhajan session becomes very bad because of you. So why not practice? Then he said, who will make me practice? I said, I am ready to sacrifice my midnight. I am ready to sit with you throughout the night also. Throughout the day, whenever you want me. I'll put the scale for you on the harmonium, what we'll practice together, so that we deserve. Even a bhajan which I would have sung 100 times in front of Swami, for the nth time I practice and come. I can't take it for granted. I should have done my bit properly. Then the rest he takes care. And we are not there to, you know, perform in a concert. We are not there to show our prowess in singing. We are there only to merge in him through bhajan, through music. So that should happen at least. So we used to make them, and we had a bhajan music room in the hostel, as it happens even today. So the tradition started at the time, and then we would do arati to the musical instruments in the hostel with all our humility to the instruments. And then we would have our practice sessions. So many singers came out like that. We would practice there. We didn't have a formal school of music like we have so fortunately today in Prashanti Nilayam. But then informally we used to practice, and then...
So it got ingrained in everyone that you have to practice.
Yes.
Before you can sing in front of Bhagwan. Even the Swami, in his most loving, compassionate manner that he is, he will just give you the blessing. But you exactly. have to work for it. There is no shortcut for that.
Exactly. And can you imagine, Vishu, the way students have been groomed up here, everyone has a very high sense of music here.
Absolutely.
You know, one day I was so surprised.
Like someone who joins Satya Sai University, even yes. once he graduates and leaves the portals after 3 years or 5 years, there is so much of music that would have just unconsciously gone into him.
Saturated, totally. And one day what happened was, one primary school boy, he was going home during his vacation, and he had been sitting there in the sands of Prashanti Nilayam. Those days, then we didn't have the Koland Hall. But then we had the concrete place where we could sit for darshan with all those arches on the far end
yes,
of the
and
foreground.
Sand also was there.
Yeah. And then this boy came to me and said, brother, the bhajan that you sang in Rag Charu Kesi was very good today.
Oh.
I said, do you know Rag Charu Kesi? I was baffled. And he said, I don't know Rag Charu Kesi, but I know that bhajan was in Charu Kesi.
Oh my God.
And he cited one or two bhajans. Should I tell you, in Charu Kesi, he was telling me that raga sense, I would call it.
Yes.
You know, people are so much steeped into that here in Prashanti Nilayam, and that is the culture that Swami has evolved for humanity.
And it's such a beautiful facet of someone's personality.
Exactly.
In so many unconscious ways, it opens up horizons in your mental framework when you have a thing like music. Suppose, you know, you didn't have any inclination towards it.
Yes.
Even though you're not a musician, but yes. that facet gets added to your personality, and in so many unconscious ways, it will be shaping the way you look at life.
Exactly.
And experience
exactly.
life.
Exactly.
Wonderful, sir. So can we go back to your interactions with Bhagwan, where he corrected a particular bhajan, or where he... like last time you mentioned where you sang a particular bhajan and he told you that, you know, you don't have to treat this bhajan in this manner, don't have to use the raga in this manner in this bhajan.
Exactly. That Rishabh Komal
in Antarjyoti, you Antarjyoti mentioned once.
Sai, which I was telling you. He was very particular about pronunciation, and I had a very strong Bengali background and Nepali background. So sa becomes sha sometimes. And I couldn't pronounce Ra properly, you know. So, in the beginning, it used to be terrible. Like, Ram used to become sometimes Dam also.
Oh, my God.
And people would come and make fun of me. So, what happened was, we had just introduced a bhajan. And those days, introduction or induction of a new composition, a new bhajan, used to be a very elaborate process, wherein we had to keep everything under condition. tabla player had to be Abhinav Kumar Upadhyay playing, or a good tabla player. Basically, normally we would look for Abhinav. And then harmonium had to be very mild. Talams had to be only one talam. Then we would request everyone not to clap that day. We would request our sound engineers, Professor K.V.R. Prasad also, sir, little more volume today at least, you know. So, little more volume on the, and little less on the, because the voice has to be heard. So, right from beginning, everything had to be taken care. And then the bhajan had to be almost the last bhajan, or the last but one. So that Swami would be seated there, and Swami would be expectantly looking at us and saying, something new today. And we would introduce a new bhajan that day. And one gesture of Bhagwan would either stop that bhajan completely.
It's over. It's over. Done for that bhajan.
Done for that bhajan. Like it happened with Atma Me Bas Jao Baba.
Oh.
We just sang that bhajan and Swami came running. He rushed to the bhajan hall and said, stop this bhajan. You are Atma. I am Paramatma. I am already Atma. And you want me to sit on the Atma? What does it mean? Atma Me Bas Jao Baba. Meaningless, Swami said, and stop the bhajan.
There's no meaning in that.
No meaning in that. Swami said, you shouldn't sing bhajans like that. But pronunciation, Krishna, I could not say, I used to Jai Jai Krishna, I was singing.
Okay.
The way he came and corrected me and said, it should be Krishna, Krishna. And then he went on to tell us the meaning of Krishna and how it should be pronounced properly. So that way, for every small thing, you know, once Swami stopped our singing Radha Krishna, Parvati Ramana, we could not do that.
For some time.
For some time. And we were all surprised. And every bhajan had to be modified that way.
Sai Krishna.
So it had to be Radha Krishna, had to be Sai Krishna.
Krishna.
So when Swami said we shouldn't sing Radha Krishna or Parvati Ramana, then we had to, as I was telling you, we had to modify. But then in my mind I thought that one bhajan was clear of this injunction. So the next day I sang Vishwanath He. I thought of only the Vishwanath part. Gaurinath was there in the next line. I didn't know that. And I sang, Hey Vishwanath, Hey Gaurinath, Hey Sai Nath Bhagwan. Swami came into the bhajan hall, stopped the bhajan. And then he said, next bhajan. So the next boy sang bhajan. And you know, when Swami would stop somebody's bhajan, he would take the life out of that person.
I know.
For me, my life was just, you know, squeezed out when he said,
stop
the bhajan.
There can't be anything more disastrous than that.
And to make it still worse, after the bhajan, after the aarti, he chastised me. From there, standing right there, near the door, he said, I told you not to sing and you sang today again. You didn't follow my command. You disobeyed me, he said. I didn't even have opportunity to say, I'm sorry, Swami. I didn't do it purposely. But, you know, when Swami commands, it has to be implicitly obeyed. So, it went on for some time. And then, till one day, he came into the bhajan hall and he said that, you have been doing a lot of brain work to modify your bhajans.
Oh, he said that?
He said that. You know why I said don't sing Radha Krishna or Parvati Ramana? Because people, when you sing Parvati Ramana, they are thinking of their Parvatis. When you say Radha Krishna, they are thinking of their Radhas. Because the world today has imbibed all these names from mythology. They wouldn't like to name their son as Ravana, Swami said. It is always Rama. So when you say Sita Ram, there is always a Ram for a Sita. But then people are so much current, people so much, you know, they never reflect that Ram is that Rama, the reincarnation of Vishnu. People can't really relate to that. So instead of relating to that, the moment you sing one of those names, people are relating that to a particular person known to them, a relative, and then so many things around that relationship, that throughout the bhajan, their mind becomes a potpourri of all these thoughts, which are all negative processes. So in order to make you people conscious that this also is happening, that when you sing a song that says Radha Krishna, you should really think of the Madhurya, the Madhur Bhakti,
the
pure love of Radha. So if that thought doesn't come to you, no point in singing Radha Krishna. Just say Sai Krishna, it's easier for you. I didn't stop you from singing. But I made you modify that so that it becomes, your sadhana becomes easier, Swami said. Then after that it was allowed.
At no point the elevated plane to which the bhajan singing should take us can be compromised.
Can be compromised. It was all the time like that. And he never left any opportunity unused to drive home these points, these subtle points. Because throughout 24/7, he was the universal teacher and he is the universal teacher. Throughout.
Wonderful, sir. Maybe you can share with us a few of your compositions and how Swami inspired you later to introduce new bhajans. And there are so many of your bhajans which are sung even now, today. They continue to be sung in Prashanti Nilayam and places everywhere else in Sai Samitis. And every composition, I believe, has a story how Bhagwan inspired to come up with that creation. Maybe you can share with us a few of those instances.
The earliest inspiration was basically a drive, you know, a need to sing new bhajans, because every day we had then the opportunity to sing new bhajans. Swami would tell anything new.
He used to tell
anything new.
Wow.
And then we had to every time say no, Swami. So that drive was the inspiration, and that was coming from him again. But then I was too young at that point of time to understand this. I was just 17 years old. And I was in my 11th standard. I happened to compose a bhajan, Karuna Sindhu Dasharath Nandan Pratipurishwar Ram.
Wow.
So when I composed that bhajan and it was introduced, we sang it before Swami, and then Swami praised it and everyone said it is a beautiful composition. And when Swami says it, then it becomes still more beautiful. Then I was totally egoistic about that composition. I was too positive and I was telling everyone that, look, I have composed a bhajan. And my best friend, Sai Shankar, was a wonderful Hindustani musician, a very good violin player, and a great person, a very good scientist today. This gentleman, he used to be all the time, you know, pulling me down to my elements, just to maybe discipline me a bit. Because I was like a galloping horse-like thing. He had to pull me down. And he would make fun of me and he would tell me, hey Sonam, what's so big about that composition, man? I can compose 10 such bhajans in a day. So one day we both were just during tea time in Vrindavan. And that used to be a very nice, wonderful session. Just tea and then lot of talk.
TNT.
And then Swami would be in Prashant. Whenever Swami would be in Prashanti Nilayam, in Vrindavan, we had all the free time. So during tea, just before games, we used to do this. And he was telling me, I can compose 10 bhajans like this. Then I told him, okay, you compose one bhajan and show me. He told me, you give me one line, I'll just tune it and show you. So I just said, Madhuvana Murali Shamu Murari, what do you think of it?
Mm-hmm.
He just composed Madhuvan Murali Shyam Murari, the tune that you know today.
Oh.
Yeah. And then four times he said the tune, the song was composed. One of the most beautiful compositions. Mm-hmm. And I can, today, in retrospect, when you look at it, anyone, you know, espousing any genre of music can sing this bhajan in any genre. This bhajan is so versatile. Is one of the most beautiful bhajans. But what happened at that day, he's, you know, this gentleman, this boy, Sai Shankar, he was in tears after the composition. Because it came like a flash. Nobody sat to compose. Nobody sat with a harmonium, with a purpose, sense of purpose that I am composing a bhajan. And when it happened, then he told me, do you see the stamp of Bhagwan on this bhajan? We said Madhuvan Murali Shyam Murari, and the bhajan got composed in Rag Madhuvanti.
Wow.
And this is what happened to me later on also. So what I'm trying to tell you is, you know, this is how he was grooming us up, that you people can also, if you empty yourself,
tune to him
and be attuned to me, a bhajan can flow through you also. You can be a deserving recipient of that amazing grace of Bhagwan. So it could happen to anybody, because in later years I have met umpteen people who never learned music in their life. But then they compose some of the most wonderful bhajans. And bhajans per se, if you look at any bhajan today, you know, it's a totally different genre. Today people have started talking about Sai Sangeet as a definitive form of the Gayaki Ang of Hindustani Sangeet, Indian music, classical tradition.
It's a total different class of music.
Different class of music. You can do anything with those four lines. It is a total bandish. And that bhajan, Madhuvan Murali Shyam Murari, when you sing it today, I have heard this being sung by a person for almost 1.5 hours he sang on this with total improvisation, unplugged. And he mesmerized me with his singing. And someone can just sing it like a bhajan. Someone can sing it like a nama sankirtan. So, that type of inspiration. And one of the arenas of inspiration used to be our own students. You know, they would say, because I had started composing bhajan. So, boys started telling me, you compose one bhajan for me, I want to sing. So, that was another way of, you know, another way in which he inspired a bhajan. So, it used to happen like, for a long time I was thinking, why is it that all the bhajans in Yaman Kalyan, they start with sa and not on ni, they don't start on nishad, which is so important, I used to feel. And then one day, there used to be a very good bhajan singer, and Swami has invested so many hours on him to teach him Carnatic classical music. Swami used to sit with him and teach him music. And this was Arun Kumar Tiwari, who is a very big officer in the Andhra government. He happened to compose a bhajan for him. And you know, those days every singer had his own style of singing. So the composer had to compose a bhajan keeping in mind the style of that person. Because, okay, I'm composing a bhajan for Arun Kumar Tiwari. He sings like this. So a little bit of Hindustani style, it has to be like this. So that used to be the framework, the rough framework. And then it used to be filled up. So the bhajan was composed, this bhajan, Mata Maheshwari Tribhuvan Janani, which is, once in a while we sing it today.
Yes.
So Mata Maheshwari Tribhuvan Janani was composed for Arun Kumar Tiwari. And I was telling him the composition in the afternoon, in the music room. And V. Kumar just barged in. And he said that you have composed for him, what about us? What about me? You compose only for big people. And all that, you know, the jibes. So with that, I said, Swami should give a composition. And then the next day, for V. Kumar, I had composed a bhajan, Arad Suno Mere Param Kripalu.
Arad Suno.
Yeah, and Arad Suno Mere Param Kripalu. Then he said, Swami tells me most of the time to sing, a very nice alap, intro type of thing. So why don't you add a mukhra to it? So I said that, okay, during lunchtime I sat down there and then in the music room, in the institute vestibule or prayer hall. And then this Prashanti Nilay Niwasa was mukhra I added to that.
Yes.
And I told him the thing. And he learnt it that day. And the next day when he sang in Prashanti Nilayam, his sonorous voice and the way he delivered that bhajan that day, I'll never forget in my life. The way V. Kumar sang that bhajan, his voice was echoing all over. And we never used to have a very sophisticated sound system also then. That's a small, humble amplifier. And we started that way and a few microphones. But V. Kumar really did it, and he sang it so well.
There's so many ways Swami made you an instrument.
Definitely.
For so many bhajans.
Definitely.
Wonderful. I think we can go on and on with your memories of days spent with Bhagwan and how the bhajan movement and Sai bhajans has touched you and transformed you in so many ways, and it still continues to do. Possibly we'll have to reserve this for future sessions. But in the end, may I ask you, what would you like to say to all the aspiring bhajan singers all over the world who want to sing for Bhagwan, for whom, like many, music is all about singing bhajans.
Yes.
They don't want to become classical exponents of music. All they want to do is sing good bhajans for Bhagwan. What would you like to say to such listeners?
Well, I would only share this with them because it's very relevant. Wherever I have gone in India, in any center, one of the phenomenon that you find there is there is always a small dissident group. And if you go and ask them, probe into why they are so negative or they are so unhappy, they say that, we are not allowed to sing bhajan.
It's always someone
who
feels he's not got enough chances. He deserves more.
Exactly. So being dissident this way also is justified. Because they feel bad, they feel totally left out. We are not allowed to sing bhajan. And then they say the normal thing. There is so much politics there, you know.
Yeah.
We are not allowed to sing. Only great singers sing. But even I have sung before Bhagwan once. Mm. And they don't realize my potential. So now, the positive part of this beautiful experience is that everywhere people are clamoring to sing bhajan. They are pining to sing bhajan. Because music is ultimately the language of the soul, the expression of the soul. So they want to do that. It's just the anahat nad, expression of the anahat nad.
Yes.
And to these people who are aspirants to sing bhajan, we have to address them. And I would really feel that there is a beautiful saying, even they serve God who sit and wait silently. If we really don't work it out and deserve to sing, which I was already telling, is everyone's prerogative to sing bhajan. But then we should have the deservedness to sing, lead a bhajan. Singing bhajan is okay. We can always sit anywhere and sing a bhajan. Sit in the wilderness and sing a bhajan. Who is there to stop? God is all the time listening. And we are God ultimately. That's what Swami has been telling. But to sing bhajan in a bhajan session, which is a meditation, as I have already said, I would feel that it's a great responsibility on our part to deserve to sing there, to be prepared, to come prepared to sing bhajan there. Swami said once, where do you practice? So some of the students said, Swami, music room. Do you have a music room? Do you practice? I know most of you practice in the bhajan hall here. Swami said that. Can you imagine the place where the bhajan is sung, the place where the concert is actually presented? If that place becomes the practice session, then the bhajan, you know, really won't have any charm in it. So Swami said, don't practice here. You should sing here. You should practice elsewhere and come. So if we want to practice, we want to sing bhajan, we should practice. If we want to play tabla, we have to practice. Because bhajan is not only singing bhajan, but it also tantamounts to a group of accompanists playing and supporting the bhajan, beautifying and ornamenting the bhajan. And ultimately, Swami said, what is a very elaborate, a very immaculate bhajan session, a successful bhajan session, is when there is a proper conjunction of bhajan very well sung with bhava, instruments very well played to support that bhajan in one unison, and then people following that bhajan in a trance-like state, in ecstasy. That becomes a total, complete, holistic bhajan session. So if we really want to have that exhilarating experience of a bhajan session, then we have to see to it that all these are fulfilled. This is what Swami has taught us, and this is what we ought to do.
It all boils down to what you mentioned before. If we cannot ensure that our bhajan becomes a meditation session,
yes,
a session of spiritual sadhana,
yes,
if there is any factor which is not contributing towards that,
yes,
then it is not a bhajan session in its true sense.
Exactly.
And wherever there are gaps, they have to be filled.
Yes.
Wonderful, sir. Thank you so much for your time. And I just hope and pray to Bhagwan that we'll have more opportunities of you coming to the studio and taking those snippets from the treasure house of your heart and sharing with all of us. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Vishu. Thank you so much. It's a great privilege.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, dear listeners. You're tuned to Morning Glory on Thursday Live, and I do hope you enjoyed the conclusion of this three-part interview with Mr. Sonam Gamso. Please send us your feedback via email to listener@radiosai.org. Dear listeners, we actually have more than 130 such interviews with Swami students available for your listening pleasure on our website, radiosai.org/sai students. Sai students is one word, and these you can download and listen at leisure whenever you have the time. And now it's time for me to wind up Morning Glory and offer my hosting efforts at Bhagwan's lotus feet. What an honor it has been to be an instrument in his divine hands. This is a very grateful Karuna from Team Radio Sai, signing off and thanking you for your company during Morning Glory on Thursday Live. Till we meet next Thursday, please be well, keep seeking, and do whatever it takes to stay inspired. Sai Ram, and over now to Brother Raghu.